very good afternoon to you. It is time now for the KHSU Magazine. It's 1 o'clock. It's time for the KHSU Magazine. Last one of the week. I'm Danielle Orr. Glad you've tuned in. Robotics Camp is coming up at HSU. It's a hands-on, activity-based program designed to inspire and foster students' interest in STEAM fields, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. I'm happy to have in the studio David Marshall and Jatwa Moore. We'll find out more about those camps. The dates are June 25th, July 9th, and July 16th. On Food for Thought today, Rhonda Wiedenbeck is going to talk to Jennifer about seaweed. We've got our community calendar of events, and here's the NPR bulletin to begin our time together.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. In a landmark decision, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that police must obtain a search warrant in order to get cell phone location information from service providers. We have more on this from NPR's Nina Totenberg.
Chief Justice John Roberts, writing for the majority, said that because cell site location records track an individual's general movements all day, every day, the information is analogous to an electronic ankle bracelet. He said that even though the cell service provider owns the information, the individual's expectation of privacy is still violated. In fact, said Roberts, historical cell site information kept for years gives the government a near-perfect surveillance tool that allows it to travel back in time to retrace a person's whereabouts. The framers of the Constitution, he said, clearly would not have allowed such an intrusion on personal privacy without a search warrant. Roberts, a conservative, was joined in the majority by the court's four liberals. The four other conservatives dissented loudly, each writing separately to indicate their strong disagreement. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
Today, President Trump met with families whose loved ones were victims of crimes committed by people who turned out to be in the U.S. illegally, days after he ended the practice of family separations that has stoked public outrage from both Democrats and Republicans. Trump has been defending his zero-tolerance policy to prosecute all people accused of crossing into the U.S. illegally.
We want people in our country based on merit, not based on a draw, where other countries put their absolute worst in a bin and they start drawing people. Where you think they're going to put their good ones, they don't put their good ones, they put their bad ones. And then when they commit crimes, we're so surprised.
Critics condemn what they call Trump's disparaging remarks about immigrants. A February 2018 study by the Cato Institute using 2015 crime statistics from Texas, for example, found that immigrants in the U.S. illegally were 25% less likely to be convicted of a homicide than native-born Americans. Well, the United Nations human rights experts are lambasting President Trump's executive order to end the separation of migrant families at the southern U.S. border. And we have more on this from NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
In a statement from Geneva, 11 U.N. special rapporteurs, including one who focuses on the rights of migrants, say that Trump's executive order fails to address the situation of children who have already been pulled away from their parents. And they warn that his plan may lead to the indefinite detention of entire families in violation of human rights standards. Earlier this week, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made clear the U.S. will not take lectures from what he called hypocritical bodies. The Trump administration pulled out of the U.N. Human Rights Council, though officials say the decision was made before the uproar over U.S. border practices. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
Before the close, the Dow is up 119 points. This is NPR News.
It's 4 minutes after 1 o'clock. You're listening to the KHSU Magazine. Still to come, a conversation about robotics camp at HSU coming up June 25th through 29. That's the first session with David Marshall and Jatwa Moore. First is your community calendar of events. Don't go away.
This is the community calendar for Friday, June 22nd, 2018. Humboldt State University is now accepting registration for three sessions of its famous Robot Camp, where students in the incoming grades of 6th, 7th, and 8th have a chance to work in teams using Lego Mindstorm and other tools. Sessions will be held Monday, June 25th to the 29th, July 9th to the 13th, and July 16th to the 20th. Register at camps.humboldt.edu or at HSU Early Outreach, phone number 826-6226. The City of Arcata is scheduling its 2018 street resurfacing project to begin Tuesday and Wednesday mornings from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The East and West Giantoli roundabouts are closed during this time. The project is scheduled to continue Tuesday through Friday mornings from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. until July 13th. Call 825-2173 or visit cityofarcata.org for more information. The City of Arcata Community Development Department is hosting a Brownfield Stakeholders Advisory Group meeting Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4 p.m. regarding the Little Lakes Industries site located at South I Street for public comment on the draft work plan. The meeting is in the Arcata City Manager's Office in City Hall. Call 822-5955 or visit cityofarcata.org/783/brownfields-initiative-grant for more information. The Coastal Conservancy has produced a draft Americans with Disabilities Act Evaluation and Transition Plan and asked the public to provide ideas, concerns, and comments by July 20th at amy.hutzel@scc.ca.gov. Area 1 Agency on Aging is reminding seniors that new Medicare cards are being distributed, and it has information on three things to know and how to watch out for scams. Visit a1aa.org or the group's Facebook page. The Redwood Community Action Agency announces that a free copy of the Humboldt Bay Area Bike Map is now available at your local bike shop, bookstore, visitor center, and from the Humboldt County Association of Governments in Eureka. The map is also available at hcoag.net/documents/humboldt-bay-area-bike-map. The City of Arcata is currently seeking community members who live or work within the Arcata planning area for 7 open vacancies on the newly formed Public Safety Committee until all positions are filled. Applications at cityofarcata.org/329/vacancies-applications. Call 822-5953 for more information. The Azalea Art Festival winners are on exhibit through July 1st at the Manly Art Center and Gallery at 433 Oak Street in Brookings. Their Arcata High School classes of 1977 and 1978 are holding a reunion in August. Visit the Arcata High 1977 and 1978 event page on Facebook for more information. I'm Damian Jimenez, inviting you to listen to KHSU's Community Calendar weekdays during Morning Edition on the KHSU Magazine and Saturdays during Weekend Edition. You may also read the week's calendar online at khsu.org. Please send information about nonprofit events to KHSU Community Calendar, 1 Harp Street, Arcata, California, 95521. You can also submit calendar items at KHSU's website or email calendar@khsu.org.
Time for a robotics camp at HSU. This is a hands-on activity-based program designed to inspire and foster students' interests in STEAM fields. Do you know what that is? Science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And the camp introduces incoming 7th, 8th, and 9th graders to various disciplines through fun, age-appropriate activities. And each session runs 1 week and has a really reasonable price. You can find out more information at camps.humboldt.edu/, and you've got sign up capabilities right there. You do need to pre-register for this. The first camp is June 25th through the 29th. The second camp is July 9th through the 13th. And the third camp, July 16th through the 20th. I'm really happy to have in the studio Jatois Moore. She's an early outreach events coordinator here at Humboldt State University in the Department of Early Outreach Programs. And she's joined in the studio by David Marshall. He's a lecturer in the math and science department, as well as working in the IT department. They're your team leaders. Let's start with you, Jatois. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So let's talk about the camp a little bit. What would you like listeners to know?
Well, we have a new exciting program coming up. This year, we've gone with 3 different sections of the robotics camp, as you said before. We encourage all parents to sign their kids up on camps.humboldt.edu. You can go on there, find out all the information, pick your date for your child, register your child, and pay all online. And then once they do that, you will get a confirmation email giving you all the details that you need to know to get your kids ready for camp and started on their first day. We are allowing signups through the weekend until Sunday at 11:59, and camp will begin Monday at 9 a.m.
11:59 p.m.
Yes.
Okay. And so you do need to register for this. And the camp includes food, and it includes all sorts of activities, including some field trips within the campus setting. So it's pretty exciting, really a comprehensive camp. And are you recommending each camp is the same, or are you recommending kids go to all three? What are you suggesting?
It'd be great if kids would like to go choose the week that they'd like to go to. Our curriculum will be the same for each week. We also this year will be having a really fun family party at the end of each week, so that the family members, parents, and you know, siblings are allowed to come in and see what the kids have been learning, watch them perform some of their different challenges that they've been going through, and everybody will have a fun reception at the end, and we'll be giving out, you know, great certificates and things like that.
How many spaces are there, and do you still have spaces left for this coming Monday?
Yes, we do still have space left for this upcoming Monday. We are only taking 22 students per session, so we encourage you guys to get signed up as soon as possible. There are just a few spots left for the Monday camp, so if you are interested, please go to
camps.humboldt.edu
and register right now.
And this is from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Correct.
5 days.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Super exciting.
It
How many years has this robot camp been going?
It's been going for 6 years.
Okay, let's switch to you. Hi, David Marshall. How are you? And thank you for joining us.
I'm awesome. Thanks for having us.
So tell us a little bit more, please.
About, I don't know, 9 years ago, I read a paper from a woman at MIT, Cheryl Turkle, and the paper was titled A Passion for Objects. And what she argued was that now, because of the way we build electronics and other things, you can't smash them and look inside. It's almost incomprehensible. Lego built these kits, 300-part kits, that lets you build something, and then you have to learn how to program it. And the idea that I had at the time is this would allow for kids to abstract into the pretty difficult area of programming, because they'd be motivated to get their robot to do something.
And so they actually get to do that in this robot camp.
Absolutely.
They build something.
They build something.
They program it.
And then they try to satisfy some, we're going to call them robot challenges. And there's a whole bunch of different things we do. Some things that are racing. Some things that are solving a problem. So there'll be a maze that they don't know about, but they know what the maze challenges will be. They have to design a piece of software that lets the robot navigate a maze without actually seeing the maze. So it's some of the stuff is pretty challenging, but we support the students really rigorously. We have myself and four other students, undergraduate at HSU, out of the physics program, the engineering program, computer science and mathematics, who are right there to help anybody that's at camp so they don't struggle, so that they will be successful.
And who are you thinking is appropriate for this? Incoming 7th, 8th, 9th graders, this is a child that is interested in what?
Well, that's a great question. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't have the ability to do something like this. And I didn't know that I was going to go into STEM areas. My degrees are in physics, electronics, and mathematics. I came to HSU to study math, did the environmental modeling program here at HSU. And so when I was a kid, I did smash things and look inside, but there wasn't any guided ability, and there certainly wasn't any program back then. I'm over 50, quite a bit over 50, actually. So now
you just
we
put
have
it
this,
back together. There
yeah,
wasn't any.
Put
any.
It back together or try to reason what this might do, whatever it is that you're looking inside of. So now we have this abstraction, this idea of programming that's pretty important for society, because everything that we touch now has some piece or some aspect of software in it.
And I was just actually, a friend of mine was in Monaco at a big conference, and they were talking about how they really don't have a lot of young people going into these fields for programming. So they're looking for these young people actually as well. So
you know, I don't know if I'd go that far, but I would say that programming is pretty rigorous. You need to stay focused and on task, and almost it's unnatural almost. We're kinesthetic beings. We like the physical world. And the physical world is something that we learn how to navigate when we're small children. Now we're doing this thing, this higher level thing. It's like a language, but it's a language that we haven't studied and we haven't learned except for the last 50 or so years. So there's a lot of uncertainty about how society is going to move forward in this area. More kids going into this is only good for everybody.
So fascinating. Something else you'd like to add, Chatois?
Register now because we are running out of spots for the our July camps are actually filling up really fast.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Our July camps are already a little over halfway full. So okay. If you are looking for the July dates, definitely look into the program. If you'd like to contact me for more information, you can call me at 707-826-5211 or send an email to jatoi.more. jatoi.more@humble.edu.
Are you going to have that same cutoff for the July 9th and July 16th beginning dates the night before at 11:59 p.m.?
Or? Yes, okay. We will. Camps will not close until the Sunday night before.
Okay, and you must register ahead of time.
You must register ahead of time.
Okay,
yes.
So they can prepare for you and have all the equipment and everything.
Yes.
Okay, and you don't need to bring food for your child unless they need snacks. You're going to take care of that on
campus.
We
have snacks. We've got a great lunch plan for them. Every single day, they get to pick out what they want and get to try something new. They're going to be actually eating on campus in the J, so they have a great variety of food to choose from.
Perfect. What a great camp. Such a reasonable price for 5 days, 9 to 4. Would you like to close out? Tell us who you are and if there's less something else in ending, closing you'd like to say.
Absolutely.
That we missed.
So there's going to be a lot of exciting things. We're going to have the Sheriff's Department bring their law enforcement robot. We're going to have demos of unmanned aircraft systems or drones. We're going to visit the Schatz Energy Research Center and a few other things. So it's not only doing the robotics and learning how to program, you're going to get a good understanding of what's going on at Humboldt State University.
It's like a college course. And please tell the listeners who you are.
So my name's David Marshall, and I'm in the IT department, but I also teach a lecture in the college in the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science.
I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
Jatois Moore. I am the Early Outreach Events Coordinator in the Early Outreach Department Programs.
And welcome to Humboldt County most recently. So
yes.
Glad you've joined the staff here. And give out that email address or the registration address one last time. Everybody, get
registration,
your pens ready.
Registration link is camps.humboldt.edu. If you have any additional questions, you may contact me at 707-826-5211 or email me at jatoi.more@humboldt.edu.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you a and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Rhonda Wiedenbeck. Rhonda is the owner and baker at Beck's Bakery. Today we're going to talk about something that's a little different, and that is seaweed collection. That was a new thing for me. Rhonda and our friend Simona, we all went out and we collected seaweed. When did you first start harvesting seaweed, and why did you do it?
So I was a student at HSU, and I was very much enamored with pond scum. yum. And was there Frank Shaughnessy. He noticed my intense interest and got me involved in the phycology class. And so his phycology class was primarily a Pacific Ocean seaweed class. And so I went out a few times with Frank, and he pointed out things like nori and wakame and stuff like that. And I was like, that's nori. That's stuff like eating nori.
Yeah.
and it didn't look recognizable in its wild form. But anyway, I just kind of kept that in the back of my head because I've always been a forager type. You know, I grew up with a father who ran around every morning just looking for wild things to bring into the house for us to eat. And so I come from that kind of background there of what can I eat that's out growing. Uh-huh. So I think about 4 years ago, my friend Glee, who was a seaweed harvester, she took me out one day, and we spent the whole day out harvesting seaweed, and I learned so much from her. And then it's been a happy seaweed hunting every year since then.
And you've taught classes at the co-op, too, about seaweed collecting and foraging.
Yes, I've taught a couple classes. First, I began with a cooking class on how to cook with seaweed, and it was everything but sushi kind of thing, because there's other people who do than I do. But During that class, people kept on asking, you know, can we harvest this locally and can you show us how to do it? And I only knew a couple things at that point, so I wasn't quite ready to do it. And then I met up with my friend Glee, and she was the one who got me really acquainted with a lot of different things. So then I just taught one field class so far through the co-op, and then I've taught other friends, just brought people out with me.
One of the things that I was wondering about were some of the regulations involved in collecting seaweed. And so I called Fish and Game and asked them about, like, you know, do you need a fishing license? And no, you don't need a fishing license to do that. And there isn't a closed season on collecting seaweed, so you don't have to worry about time of the year and which is the time that you can collect seaweed. I think there are times, though, that the tides are better, right?
So seasonally, there's things that you should consider in the fall. The seaweed gets pretty beat up and starts to fade and just doesn't look so good. And in the spring, it's just, it's too young. It's too small. Usually kind of midsummer is a good time. 4th of July is a nice time to start harvesting.
Oh, so, that's good to have a date like that. Uh-huh. Go. It's seaweed season.
Indeed.
And then one of the things that was kind of interesting to us is you and I and Simona were standing there on the beach with our bags of goodies there, was Fish and Game drove by, and then we were like, now what is the aggregate weight that you can have? And
right.
Well, we found out that it's 10 pounds wet aggregate, so that's like all the different species that you get have to weigh 10 pounds or less per person.
Right.
So we were well within our limits there. And then there are species that you can't harvest.
Right. So there's the sea palms, which are those gorgeous looking little palm trees sitting right at the crash zone of the waves. Those aren't legal to harvest. There are commercial harvesters who get special permits and can get them. That's why you would find them in the stores for sale. But individuals can't harvest that. And then there's also eelgrasses, but you wouldn't really be harvesting those to eat anyway, but they're protected as well.
And then there was the other one was surfgrass. They told me which must be similar.
Yes,
So what kinds of seaweeds can we harvest up here?
Yeah, so there's a wide variety of things. I kind of stick with a few that I'm really familiar with. Nori, of course, which is the one that kind of looks like a wet trash bag in the water.
That's what you'd said when we were collecting. That's exactly what it looked like. And we're so used to seeing it in a sheet, you know, that you buy in the store. So we were kind of surprised how it looked in the wild.
Right. This greenish brown wet trash bag. Then there's the wakame or alaria is the genus. And what else do we get? Oh, kombu is a real common one to get. Those I use a lot in my cooking. And while you're out there, there's fun ones to eat just while you're doing it. And that would be the rockweeds. There's the little rockweed, which is, you know, there would be the seaweed that you would see at the top of the rocks, the highest zonation of plants, often little rockweeds at the very top. And then just below that would be the regular rockweed. So we have little rockweed is called Pelvidiopsis. The regular, the bigger rockweed is Fucus. You can eat those while you're out there.
Now, there's also how to dress. You know, you had to tell us how to prepare because then we needed to bring a bag. And the good thing that you told us was bring a mesh bag because you don't want to be trying to transport all that water back with you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, we brought a bunch of onion bags and cantaloupe bags and stuff like that with us. And then dressing was you want to dress in layers because, you know, often we're going out first thing in the morning and it's cold. But you also want to be able to wade in water. So it's kind of a funny getup to be wearing multiple layers on top with a vest or something and a hat and a scarf and then a skirt.
And then shoes that you can totally trash.
Right.
Because they're going to get in the seaweed and they're going to get nasty.
Yeah, indeed.
And one of the things that you talked to us about when we were out there harvesting is not taking the whole plant, but really protecting the plants.
Yeah. You know, some of the locals call it picking, seaweed picking, and you're really not picking, you're cutting. You don't want to pull the plant up. It would be just like pulling up, you know, a plant that's rooted in the earth. You want to cut from there. And there's lots of guidelines now online. Seaweed harvesting has become really more popularized and bloggers are writing about it and stuff. So you can probably find some good guidelines online on how to do it. But, you know, you want to leave a couple inches of stalk left there. That's actually the stipe. And you want to leave that so that the plant can regenerate. You don't want to pull it all the way off.
I was really surprised how fast it was. I mean, how fast we got to that 10-pound aggregate limit per person. I mean, we went out there and the kombu was just amazing, and we collected a lot of that, and that is one that I tend to use a lot of. But it was just really maybe we were out there a couple hours.
If even. I mean, part of it was the socializing aspect of it, just to, afterwards to hang out and eat and talk about what we got and how we're going to use it and what we need to do next.
And one of the things that you had mentioned, we were out there and I didn't even notice that you were observant enough to see it, but there was a sea lion out there that was close by. So kind of keeping an eye out on the wildlife that's out there and staying a decent distance away so that you don't frighten them.
Right. There's rules about staying away from marine mammals, and you don't want to activate them and get them upset. Yeah. And I can't remember what it was, but I just knew we needed to stay away.
Right.
I don't remember how far it was, but it was like, oh, looky there.
One of the things that then we needed to think about is what happens when we get home with this bag of wet, you know, sea-smelling stuff. So then we dehydrated it.
Yes, and that's something that you really don't want to let that sit for a while, because you'll end up with this moribund, just foamy, nasty smelling thing. It goes quick when it's not in its environment.
And we had to rinse it.
Yeah, right, because it's so full of sand, and then there's also little critters in there, the sea lice.
Well, that was funny because when I dehydrated, I thought I cleaned it really well, and I put it in my dehydrator, and I looked at it, and I went, oh, look, shrimp. And Steve goes, that's not shrimp. Because that's sea lice. It's like, oh, that just doesn't sound near as tasty.
Yeah. And then there's the little snails, too, that taste like, you know, they don't. I don't know what they taste like when they're dried, but when you bite into one, you know it.
Oh.
So you have to kind of probe around your wild-crafted, self-dried seaweed so that you don't get goodies that you don't want to eat.
Yeah, and I noticed that when they did dry, that stuff seemed to come away from it fairly easy. It was fairly easy to end up with some really good product.
Yep, it was pretty easy. Yep, they just kind of drop off usually.
And tell me what your favorite dish is to use kombu.
Oh, kombu. I do a lot of beans, and so I always put a piece of kombu in my beans. It's supposed to help with digestion, so they don't give you the intestinal disruption.
Distress.
Good word. So I use a lot of kombu for that. And that's anytime I'm doing beans, I throw in kombu. And I think it adds a nuanced flavor to it. And it also helps, it provides some thickener to the sauce around the beans.
Well, this is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of talking with Rhonda Wiedenbeck, the owner and baker at Beck's Bakery.
Grapes and the cakes. Hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought.
This afternoon here on the North Coast, we've got mostly sunny skies with a high of 67 degrees. Tonight, patchy fog and a low of 51. Saturday brings us a high here on the coast of 72 degrees and sunny skies after a little bit of patchy fog. Saturday night, patchy fog coming back in after all that hot weather with a low of 55 degrees. So nice weekend for you all, and I'd like to thank our guests in the studio today, David Marshall and Jatwa Moore. Robotics Camp begins June 25th. There are three sessions. There's a great website, camps.humboldt.edu. There are videos and all sorts of information about Section A, Section B, Section C. Section A begins June 25th. You know when that is. It's coming up on Monday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and you can register right there online. You must pre-register for each section. So, sounds really fun. And this is, again, for incoming 7th, 8th, and 9th graders interested in science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And thanks to Jen Bell for Food for Thought, a regular feature on Fridays, and our community calendar read today by Damien, edited and compiled by Fred McLaughlin. Up next is Making Contact, a regular feature at 1:30 on KHSU, followed by 2 hours of reggae, the Jam Down from 2 until 4. I'm Danielle Orr for the KHSU Magazine. Thanks for listening. Donors include Soul to Soul Spa and Foot Bar, a full-service day spa at 854 10th Street in Arcata next to Humbrews. The spa offers massage, foot treatments, facials, waxing, pedicures, and more. Hours are Monday through Saturday from 11 to 7 and Sundays 11 to 5. Learn more at 822-SOUL or soultosoulspa.com. Donors include Healing Spirit Animal Wellness Center, hosting the 5th annual Humboldt Bay Critter Crawl, July 15th, starting at 9 a.m. The event is an open water swim in the bay, followed by a silent auction on Woodley Island to benefit the North Coast Marine Mammals Center. Learn more at HumboldtBayCritterCrawl.com. Have a great afternoon, everyone. Here is Making Contact.
This week on Making Contact.
Make some noise! Make some noise if your rent has gone down. Yeah.
California's fight over rent control.
I want to share with you some of the real rent increases that I've heard straight from the mouths of tenants as I've been collecting signatures over the last few months. $100 every 3 months over the last 2 years. Seniors on a fixed income getting hit with a $350 a month increase. $1,000 all at once, plus no pets allowed any longer. That's an eviction notice.
The stage is set for a political battle between two polar worldviews. Is housing a human right, or is real estate an investment commodity? And where on that continuum is California's common ground? The Affordable Housing Act is a proposed state ballot initiative that, if approved, would once again allow local governments to create their own rent control laws. On this episode of Making Contact, we'll go to one of many smaller cities in California, where rents can double overnight. And later in the show, we'll go next door to the city of Los Angeles, where Making Contact contributor Carla Green looks at the city's policies affecting homeless encampments and their residents. But first, we go to the city of Glendale, California, where a local tenants organization is working to qualify a city ballot measure that would cap rent increases at 4% a year.
Hello. I am a renter. I am part of the Glendale Tenants Union. I am living in constant anxiety. I'm on a month-to-month rental agreement, which can be raised as much as my landlord would like with only a few months' notice. The bulk of my paycheck goes towards my rent, and if it is unreasonably raised, I am going to need to leave Glendale, where I have built a life.
My name is Vanessa Sermeno, and I'm a preschool teacher full-time.
Vanessa had not been living in constant anxiety.
But yeah, it was always in the back of my mind, like it could happen. It just didn't happen. So I felt really lucky. I was like, okay, another year went by without a rent increase.
For 4 years, Vanessa and her two daughters lived comfortably in their Glendale apartment until this past February.
My daughter opened the mail to my oldest daughter, and she sent me a text while I was still at work. She took a picture of the letter and texted me. It's like, Mom, they're increasing our rent. And I was just, when I saw the letter, the picture, I was like, I just couldn't believe like how much they increased it by. And I just was like, oh my God.
Vanessa had been paying $1,100 a month. Her new rent would be $2,150, $1,050 more than what she had been paying.
At 60 days to either stay or give a notice to move.
The city of Glendale has what's called a just cause eviction law. It says that a landlord has to give a tenant 60 days notice and cite at least one of 12 reasons to legally evict them. The concern for renters like Vanessa is that currently there is no limit to the amount a tenant's rent can be raised.
Nairi Kachikian.
Council members, my name is Nairi Khachikian. I'm a member and volunteer with Glendale Tenants Union. I want to share with you some of the real rent increases that I've heard straight from the mouths of tenants as I've been collecting signatures over the last few months. $100 every 3 months over the last 2 years. Seniors on a fixed income getting hit with a $350 a month increase. $500 increased over 3 years. $1,000 all at once, plus no pets allowed any longer. That's an eviction notice. $1,200, all at once. That's an eviction notice.
The Glendale Tenants Union formed in 2017 after some of their members caught wind of steep rent increases. So they decided to get a petition together. It was pretty grassroots.
My name is Oganesh John Bagjian, and I'm retired.
John helped collect signatures in 2017 to put a rent stabilization measure on the local ballot.
And we laid out ordinance